We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Muse, the brain sensing headband dedicated to unlocking your brain's potential and revolutionizing health, and Meditation Studio, the 5-star app. I'm Patricia Karpus. Don't forget to check out the hundreds of free meditations on the Meditation Studio app at choosemuse.com/meditationstudio. Today's guest is a stellar human being, and I personally have learned so much from her. Anise Kavanaugh is an award-winning speaker, author, teacher, strategic advisor, and thinking partner for many innovative organizations and individuals. She's also the CEO of Active Choices, a strategic advisory and training company. Today, we get to the heart of many of the ideas she shared in her books, and we dive into her proprietary approach to leadership called intentional energetic presence. The bottom line, how we show up in the world matters. It doesn't matter whether you're at work or at home, it matters. Your intentions, energy, and presence can have a positive or a negative impact depending on the choices you make. She unpacks why we need tools and practices for self-awareness, honest reflection, being more present and intentional so that we can create the most dynamic, positive, impactful, and fulfilling opportunities in our lives. I love this quote from one of her books. We create our experience in every moment. Contract or expand, repel or invite, fear or love, abdicate or lead, we choose. I think you'll find her as inspiring and incredible as I do. Now, here's Anise. Anise, I'm so excited to have you on Untangle today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me, Patricia. I'm so excited to be here. I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah, I loved Contagious You, the book that you wrote after you wrote the first book, Contagious Culture. And I think of you as someone who does consulting for businesses and for leaders, but Contagious You struck me as this guide to how we want to lead our lives as human beings. It was so personal and real. I really wanted to understand the progression for you. You wrote Contagious Culture, then Contagious You. What inspired you to both of these books and to your protocol called IEP?
Called IEP, which stands for Intentional Energetic Presence. So nobody gets hung up on that acronym and is trying to figure that out this whole time. IEP, Intentions, Energy, Presence. And I know we're going to get into it. So I wrote Contagious Culture back in 2015. And the reason why I wrote that, the impetus for that was I've been leading this company for 22 years. And I had been doing a lot of work with executives and business leaders and designers and all different industries, Patricia, human beings who wanted to lead and have more impact. And with Contagious Culture, what I had noticed for all my years in business was that people would often put culture and their well-being and their results and how they were feeling, they would often put it on things that were outside of themselves. So they would think the C-suite creates the culture. My team creates the culture. Oh my gosh, if my boss was easier to work with, or my direct reports were easier to work with, if these people did things differently, we'd have a better culture. I'd feel better. I'd be happier. I'd get better results. That was one of the pieces that I noticed, was that in this work, we hold that every single person creates the culture. Every single one of us creates a culture. If I'm waiting for people outside of me to be creating the culture, I'm in a lot of trouble, because I don't have any control over anything outside of myself, but I control myself. So a lot of the work that we've done over the years has been really helping people get that I am the culture, how I show up, my IEP, my intentions, energy, and presence, what I bring to the table. That actually is the biggest culture creator, because when you have a bunch of people showing up well together and being intentional about the culture they want to create, then you start to actually create a positively contagious culture.
No, I love that. So the culture begins with you. So I want to get into some of the tools and strategies, actually. You talk about IEP being really how you show up in all of your relationships. And maybe that starts with navigating your own mindset or strengthening your presence, taking more control of your interactions. What are some of the steps for doing that? What does it mean? How does setting your intention and
Let's do it. Okay. So this is the other piece I just want to close the loop on, because it's an important bridge, is I know your original question was what started for contagious you? Like, why did I write contagious you? And so the contagious culture, part of why contagious you was born, was because even after Contagious Culture was written, we still had business leaders that would come up to me after keynotes and they'd say, oh, that's great. I'm so glad you wrote that book. My team needed it. My people needed to know it. I'm good. Do me a favor and send me the culture change list so I know how to change our culture. And then I remember one guy actually patted me on the shoulder and walked away. It was very interesting. But what I noticed was happening is every time that kind of a conversation would happen, if their people were around in that conversation, they'd say something like, oh my gosh, Anisa, of all the people in the audience that needed to hear how important their presence is, if of all the people that needed to hear that, that guy or that woman or whoever, that person is the person that needed to hear it, because that's the person everyone keeps quitting. That's the person that people are afraid to work with. So that's why Contagious You was written, is because I realized that with contagious culture, we still weren't getting all the way through with that message about we're all the culture, how we show up, especially as an executive in a company. The executives set the tone. Every single person, frontline worker to the executives, human beings, like all of us are setting the tone all the time. But the more intentional we can be, especially as we hire in our position of authority and responsibility, the more intentional we are there, the more aware of our impact we are, then the better the results are going to be for our people. So just to create the bridge, Contagious You was built to help those people. I call them the Georges and the Georgettes of the world, because I had never met a George or Georgette at that point, was to help the Georges and the Georgettes understand that, oh, shoot, it actually is me. I think it's everybody else, and I think I don't need this, but it is me. So it was to help them. But then it was also to help the people who actually have really good IEP, who were really doing great work and really excited to be doing their work, but they were exhausted by the Georges and the Georgettes. So it was to help them hold their space. So the two go really well together, but that's why I think Contagious Cultures is a better book for getting into the content and understanding what the work is about. But Contagious You is like, all right, if you really want to do the work and you really want to be a leader who shows up well, who can sustain their energy, who also doesn't get sucked into the negativity, whether you're at the holiday Thanksgiving dinner or you're in the boardroom, if you want to do that, then you do Contagious You.
What's also striking me here is how profound it is that we lack this self-awareness. And the leader that came up to you and said, okay, give me the checklist of what I can tell my employees or what I can bring back to my team. And it happens in relationships too. People tend to think, oh, it's the other person. He does this or she does this. And it's so interesting what brings us to this aha moment that we have ownership and control over our own mindset. We have this awareness. Where do we get this? It hasn't been cultivated in our childhood.
Yeah.
which for most of us, it hasn't.
It hasn't. No, of course. So a couple, like one, I love that question so much because let's face it, it's not like we walk around in our lives going, oh, let me look at myself and let me spend time to build my self-awareness up. Because we're usually, human beings are generally in react mode. Generally speaking, we're in react mode. We're trying to survive this and deal with this and make this happen. And so one, I think it's not a skill that's taught. I would love to see these skills and awareness taught at a very young age for people to start realizing like what I have impact, my presence, how I show up is my impact. This is huge. To your question about what makes us finally get that awareness, in my experience, it has usually been somebody keeps creating the same pattern in the same situation in the relationships, whether it's personal or in leadership or whatever it might be, the same pattern continues to happen. And they finally somehow, either because somebody who loves them reflects it back to them, or because they, I think, just get so exhausted with themselves, they go, huh, I'm the common denominator here. Wherever I go, there I am. I keep creating my reality in this way. This thing keeps happening. And so if I can get curious about like, huh, Anise, why might this situation keep happening again and again? That can start bringing me into an awareness. When people give people feedback, the people in this world who are brave enough to give people feedback about their impact, I think that they are absolute gifts. So I think to give really honest feedback to somebody about the way that they're showing up and the impact they're having, one, that's a courageous act. But two, it can change the trajectory of a leader's presence if the feedback is given in service of. And then the other thing I think often will happen is just surrender. I'll speak for myself only, but I know for me, some of my quirks and some of my patterns that have not been helpful in my life, I've finally gotten to the point where I've been like, huh, kind of tired of this. I wonder what it might be like if I were to show up a little bit differently with this particular thing. So to me, that's about surrender and then getting really curious. Yeah.
I love that notion of, hey, this thing keeps happening. I think I'm going to try showing up a little differently here. There's a quote in the book, we create our experience in every moment, contract or expand, repel or invite, fear or love, abdicate or lead, we choose. And I think that's so interesting because we learn in mindfulness practices and so many other therapy, whatever, we learn that we have this ability to pause and respond versus react.
Yeah.
I guess this is the same question that will probably keep coming up because we talk about this so much on this podcast and you and I talk about this. How do we get there? How do we get to that place where we actually say, I have a choice and I'm going to make this choice because of this bigger guidance?
I want to think about that one. As you know, I'm just coming out of a huge choice I just made personally.
Do you want to share that?
I will share the short answer. And of course, I'm going to say the short answer, knowing that this is my experience and everybody has to take this for themselves and figure it out. But what I have found, and we find this with our clients that are grappling with this question you just asked me, is we look at 70% of this work is in awareness. Because once you have awareness, you have power of choice. Without awareness, we suffer and we struggle because we don't understand what's happening. And then we start feeling victim to our lives or victim to the relationship or whatever. As soon as I have the awareness that I'm author of my life, I get to choose how I want to show up. And I get to choose how I want to relate to something. As soon as I have that awareness, as soon as I have the awareness that, huh, the way I'm showing up in this conversation right now is actually not helpful. Or, wow, Patricia might be experiencing me right now as really resistant, or Patricia might be experiencing me right now as really judgmental. As soon as I have the awareness that something is not working, if I'm willing to then get curious, take a breath, reboot, give myself some space, from there, the rest of the 30% is what I decide to do with that awareness. So we find this all the time with the leaders that we work with is that they keep creating unintended impact. They don't understand, like, they're either creating unintended impact and we call it leaving dead bodies everywhere they go, or they're having a really hard time holding their space, really hard time holding their space as a leader, just holding that presence, commanding a strong enough space that they're not being interrupted all the time. So the minute that they start to have the awareness of, ah, there's something in the way that I'm showing up. I'm not clear on my intention. I'm not managing my energy. I'm exhausted. I'm actually not present because I'm sitting here thinking, do these people like me? Like the minute I have awareness around that, I'm at the PowerPoint where I can choose to start to show up differently. And when our coaches are coaching people, it's this quiet, you just check awareness. So in fact, the first 2 weeks of coaching engagements with our clients, no matter what level they're at, we're looking at their self-care. We're looking at their presence. We're looking at how aware are they of how they're actually showing up. And we ask them for those first 2 weeks to not actually do a lot, but just to spend time in awareness and noticing.
Can you talk a little bit about that process of introspection or inquiry? Because in IEP, you talk a lot about being mindful of your thoughts, emotions, actions to create that environment that you want to create. What is that want dial? Knowing your why. It sounds to me like you take people through a process that gives them the tools to be able to sit and say, hey, why am I doing this? What is it that I really want? What should guide my next behavior?
Yeah, that's great. So if you look at the IEP methodology, and you can see a lot of this, you can see some of this in the book. And then obviously, when we're with people, we go into the different nuances of the methodology. But essentially, what you're talking about, Patricia, is at the very beginning, in the center of the IEP methodology model, there is what we call the essential you. And the essential you is where my core values are, my purpose, my intentions. It's the essential you is me basically being myself, not showing up in the way that everybody else wants me to show up, but really being honest about who I am, what's important to me. The essential you is where authenticity lives. Essential you is where we call it the bubble. There's a bubble. You read the book, so you know what that means, but we call it the bubble, which is the space that I hold. And in this space, in my space, I'm in control of my space. I hold my space as leader. So if I can have that awareness of, oh my gosh, I'm getting overwhelmed. I'm getting frustrated. I don't like this meeting. I don't like this conversation. Oh my gosh, this family dinner. I'm losing my space in this family dinner right now. I'm getting really contract. I always think of it as contraction expansion, as you mentioned. If I can have the awareness that that's happening and I take a breath, it's like a little reboot. And I remember I have my own space. In that moment, I get to decide, and this is where the power is, I get to decide how I'm going to interact with this conversation or with whatever's happening. And so the stronger my sense of self is, the stronger my essential you, the stronger my values, the more clear I am on my values and what's important to me, the stronger I am on my intention, how I want to show up, what I want to create in this world, the stronger those things are, the easier it's going to be for me to bubble up, hold that space, check in and go, oh, actually, I'm going to tap into curiosity right now, or I'm going to tap into grace, or I'm going to tap into holding a boundary right now, which is that I am not going to be a part of this conversation because it's yucky. So I get to decide. But what happens is we beautiful, amazing human beings tend to move so quickly through our lives, and we're so busy, and we're so in our heads, and we're so in react mode that we don't stop, take a pause to notice, whoa, this doesn't feel good to me. I feel overwhelmed. I'm ticked off. We don't stop to go, huh, what's going on right now? And how might I shift in order to start to create more of the impact I want to have? So with the essential you that's in the center of the model, the other part of essential you is that we are always at choice and we have control over ourselves. So owning that, me taking 100% accountability for my life right now, whether I think my life is fantastic or terrible, my relationships, my health, me taking 100% accountability, that is my get out of jail free card. Because if I take 100% accountability for my happiness and how I'm showing up, I can do everything about that. If I blame you for how I'm showing up or my happiness or whatever, I can't do anything about that.
You talked about being at a family dinner, for example. So you're sitting there and you're getting triggered by something, some story you've been telling yourself for years, some new behavior that reminds you of an old behavior. Is it that you have practiced your self-awareness protocol, your essential you, knowing your values, knowing your bigger picture that prevents you from engaging in that tug or that trigger?
Largely in part, for sure. If you look at the IEP methodology, there's three parts to it. And the first part is the ability to reboot. So we've been talking a little bit about rebooting, just noticing what's happening and just rebooting and being at choice, owning my impact and my presence. The second part of the methodology is the ability to build a strong energetic field and foundation. And this is the one that is happening in every single thing we do. This is the food that we eat, the way we're thinking, who we're hanging out with, how our environment is. This is where therapy often comes in. You know, a lot of times when people come into this work, they'll actually start doing therapy because their awareness goes up where they go, whoa, I got some cleanup on aisle 9 to do. I actually really need some support here. Wow, I keep getting triggered at the family dinner. I keep getting triggered in my team meetings, or I keep getting triggered by this kind of a leader. Wow, I think I need to do some exploration work around that. And so a lot of times, I'd say a good percent, I don't want to give it a percentage, but like a decent amount of people, when they start doing this work, they will actually start to get into some therapy or something to support them if they keep hitting the same triggers. Other things in building that energetic field have to do with managing your energy. Every single thing we do, the people we hang out with, the words we use, our sleep, every single thing we do is either building our field or depleting it. And so the stronger your energetic foundation and field is, the easier it's going to be to do the things we're talking about. Because I know, for example, I would never go into a crazy family dinner without really making sure that I did a little bit of a meditation practice beforehand, that I set my intentions, and that I made sure I did not eat sugar beforehand. Because I know for me personally, sugar is not good for me. Sugar, it weakens my ability to stay present. Sugar makes me more agitated. Sugar makes me feel more vulnerable. I take things more personally when I'm high on sugar. So I know that before I go into a lead a session, before I go into talk with difficult conversations, I'm never putting sugar in my body. So it's little things like that of looking at how did I set myself up for success before I went into that family dinner, so I'm as supported as possible. So there's building your strong field. And then the third part of the methodology is the ability to create intentional impact. We have a 5-step framework that we use, and it's incredibly powerful because we're basically looking at, if I'm going to the family dinner, but you and I, before coming in to talk with you today, I'm doing my IEP sheet and my 5 steps to intentional impact. I made sure I'm hydrated. I made sure I got sleep last night. I made sure I'm clear about my intention, which is just basically service and connection with you and I. That intentional impact, those 5 steps to intentional impact of looking at what do we want to create, that becomes actually the easiest part of the methodology. Because if you're able to reboot and you're able to build your field, then you can very quickly start to plug in, all right, what's the impact I want to have here and how am I going to have to show up to have it?
You put that so beautifully. How do we find our blind spots? Does it always have to be that they come from somebody else saying, hey, you did this? Or blind spots? They're called blind spots because we can't see them.
You know where I think the best indicator of blind spots is anywhere in our life where we're not happy.
So that's a little window into, is it a feeling tone?
It's a feeling. It's like you can reverse engineer. Honestly, when we think about it this way, life is very exciting because you can reverse engineer anything. If I'm not having the impact I want to have in a relationship or at work, I'm not getting a promotion, you name it, whatever it is for everybody listening to this. Like if I'm not having the impact I want to have, or I don't feel the way I want to feel, if I'm willing to take a step back and be really honest with myself around like, huh, well, what is happening that's getting in the way of doing that? I'm likely going to find a couple tangible things that I am doing or not doing that are keeping me from having the impact I want to have. And then if I drill deeper, I'll start to go, huh, well, why is that? Why am I not doing that? Why am I not having this hard conversation with this person? And I could start to find little quiet blind spots. Blind spots are technically they're blind spots because we can't see them. But I think that's an interesting way to start to go into them of like, huh, I'm not happy about this. I'm not happy about this relationship. Let me reverse engineer what's happening. What part am I playing in it? How am I complicit in creating the thing that I say I want or don't want? How am I complicit there? And underneath that, I will start to find little things that I am doing or not doing, or a lot of times it's old stuff. So often, as you and I both know, it's old stuff. It's stuff that happened like before we were even 7 years old that created some trigger or a pattern for us that if I can start to get curious about that, I can go back and I can start to, I don't want to say heal it, but maybe heal it or just learn how to work better with it.
It's fascinating because as you're saying this, I'm thinking the first step in finding your blind spot or even recognizing that there's one there is a willingness. And so often when you're in communication with someone else and you can see their blind spot, this happens in families. Mm-hmm. You can see it. It's like a giant writing on a chalkboard. It's just vivid. But people need to see them for themselves.
Yeah, I always trust that people, if they don't want to see it, they're not ready to see it. So I always trust, like, I work to be really tender about that, because a lot of times we see each other's blind spots all the time, as you just said. But if somebody is really committed to not seeing their blind spot, so one way of saying it is they're really committed to their misery. If somebody's really committed to their misery, there's something that misery is giving them right now. They're either not ready to start working on it, they have more learning to do and more pain to.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors, big and small. We talk about these often on Untangle. When we keep things bottled up inside, it can start to impact our health mentally, emotionally, and physically. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, whatever it is. If this sounds like you, and it's a bit of all of us, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule and needs. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/untangle today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/untangle. Now over to Untangle. We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
Be in with that blind spot. Here's an example. I have a thing, I call it the 3 strikes rule.
Is this for dating or for?
Yeah. Oh gosh, it could apply there too. That's true. It could apply there too. I hadn't thought about it. Probably. It's not 3 strikes, but it's more like 3 balls. Like, I'll throw you 3 balls. So for example, years ago, I was at a barbecue and it was on a weekend and I was there with a bunch of friends and there was somebody I had not met yet. And we were in the kitchen. Everyone was just catching up. And this person said, "Oh, I got laid off 6 months ago and I'm really upset about it." And they said, "And the thing that was even worse is I got laid off from my job 3 years ago and I got laid off with the one before that." So there's a pattern. And we got into conversation and she found out what I did. So she started asking me a bunch of questions. And I said, "How could you use this time to start to look at the commonalities behind the different layoffs and the jobs that you were in? And how could you actually use this time to start to pull threads to look at what you want to do next and be really intentional about it? Because you have an opportunity now to really intentionally do a reboot and decide what you want to do next." And this person said, "Oh, I don't really have time to do that. I don't really want to do that." Okay. Ball one. I lobbed the ball. That was a good ball. Ball one. There's a place to go. She didn't want to do it. I said, "Okay." And I'm thinking, you're laid off. You don't have a job right now. You're just complaining about how much time you have and you don't want to do that work. I'm never going to force something on somebody. I'm never going to tell them what to do. But it was an invitation. So then the next thing she said was that she had gained a lot of weight and she was really upset about that. And she's feeling bad about herself because she's gained all this weight. Now she's unemployed. So I said, "Actually, if I'm hearing it right, you're unemployed right now. So you have time. Like, how could you use this time to get into a different kind of relationship with your body and to start exercising?" She said, "I don't have time to exercise or take care of myself. I'm trying to find a job." Ball two.
Okay. Yeah.
So I said, "Okay."
Blind spot.
Blind spot. I'm sharing this without, it wasn't like I was sitting and being like, "Oh my God, I can't believe you're doing this." It was just a noticing, like, "Oh, okay." So then I think the third thing I said was something to the effect of, "Well, it sounds like you've got it figured out in terms of how you want to search for your job and your well-being. I would just offer that there may be a really good opportunity right now for you just to do a big reset, just to really take a step back, get curious and do a reset." And she goes, "I don't have time to do that." Ball three. So I simply said, "Okay, well, it sounds like where you're at right now is really serving you. Sounds like where you're at right now is serving you. Like, if you're not wanting to make any changes, that sounds like it's serving you." And I said, "If at any point you decide you do want to make a change there, feel free to reach out and our firm can happy to set you up with one of our coaches or something." But the point is that that person, for whatever reason, they need more time for themselves in that place before they're going to be willing to take on any outside support or to start making changes. And we see this all the time. When you hear people like, oh my gosh, I always date the worst guys, or I always have the worst jobs, or I always date the worst women, or I always have, always. If you hear yourself saying always, or something's happening again and again, you are the common denominator. You're the common denominator. And so there's a blind spot there. If you're willing being the key word, I love the word willing that you just offered. If you're willing to get really curious, and also, by the way, to be really gentle and loving with yourself, like, huh, wow, this keeps happening in my life. There's something here. It's tender. I'm scared to look at what that is. If we're willing to be tender with ourselves and to get curious, then on the other side of that is where I think our freedom is, because we can start to find what is it that I'm doing, or what is the support that I really need so I can move forward in a different way. But willingness is right. We have people all the time, they're not coachable. We'll have people, this happens all the time. Hey, can you coach my spouse, or can you coach my boss, or can you coach my team member, or whatever? And we won't do it that way, because the person has to want to make change. We can't talk them into it. So there's a willingness that's really important. And I think that's very tender territory. It's really tender territory for people.
And I like the way you were describing the three ball example, because what you were trying to do is chip away without making someone feel defensive, not incriminating someone for their blind spots, but as you said, offering an invitation. And we've all heard this a million times: when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And someone will have a moment where something just completely opens up and they're ready. And that's the timing.
I think that's really right. I think the other thing that was happening there was I hope being kind and helpful to that person in some way, shape, or form, but I was also protecting my energy. So there's not going to be a person listening to this right now that doesn't have somebody in their lives that says they want to change something, but constantly says, oh no, that won't work. Oh no, that won't work. And it can be very easy. I'll speak for myself. It can be very easy to get hooked into trying to be helpful, hooked into changing someone's blind spot because we can see it. It can be pretty easy. It can also be exhausting. You know, there's a rule in the IEP methodology, which is that the lowest vibration will win. The lowest vibration will win unless somebody, and now it's you, if you're hearing this, is really good at holding their state. And this is what we do in our programs. We train people, how do you hold your state so you don't get sucked into that? What that typically looks like is you're talking to somebody and you're like feeling really good. So there's me at that barbecue. I'm feeling really, really good. And then there's this person who's lower vibration, who's just committed to, no, that won't work. We see this in meetings. You see this everywhere. You see this in the grocery store. How are you doing, George? Oh, the rule is lowest vibration will win. So if I'm not holding my space that day, if I had not been able to hold my space, get curious, notice, not get attached to shifting where that person was at, if I had done any of that, I would have matched the lowest vibration. But instead, I held my space and I have my three ball rule. And it was like, okay, I'm going to stay here. I'm going to be in a place of love. I'm going to come from a place of contribution. I'm going to come from a place of curiosity. I'm going to come from unattachment. I'm going to offer her a couple of things, reflections. And then guess what? I'm going to go back outside and have a hot dog or whatever they were eating. Like, I'm going to hold my space so I don't get sucked into it, because I know me too. I can feel it in my body when I'm getting hooked. I can feel it in my body. And everybody, by the way, can, if you start to pay attention to this. This is a practice of starting to notice, where do you feel contraction and expansion in your body? Where do you start to feel hooked into somebody's stuff? The minute I start to feel that hook, that is a sign for me to take a breath, take a step back, notice what's got me hooked. Why am I attached to what this person's going to do? Why am I attached? So that was a way of me owning my own space, being of service, which is one of my core values, is to always be of service, and then moving out of there without judging it and everything. I share it today just because it's one of the best examples I have of people have to go through their process and get their learning. And it's none of our business how fast they do that.
Yeah. It's so interesting because I feel like I'm a very sensitive person, for better or for worse. And so I feel other people's energy. So it is really interesting because I'll feel it when somebody, I'm like, oh, that person sucked the energy out of the room. And it's really helpful to think about, holding your own intention and holding your own energy, and sometimes also being really empathetic to that person, but not taking on their energy. Now, I think there's a distinction between taking on their energy, or like you say, taking on that vibration, and feeling empathy.
And what you're speaking to right now is exactly why I feel so devoted to this work. Because what you're talking about, when we are not able to hold our space and we take on other people's energy, there's the two sides. So if I'm not able to hold my space and I'm taking on everybody else's energy, I'm not going to be an effective leader. I won't be able to see straight. I'm going to be exhausted. The other side of that is, if I'm not aware of the energy I'm putting out there and I'm not responsible for it, and I just run around leaving dead bodies all behind, like leaving dead bodies everywhere and having an intentional impact, and I'm not aware of the energy in the present. The simplest place to look at this is just how present a person is with the people that they love and lead. So you're with your child, with your spouse, with your direct report, with your boss. How present are you? Because in your presence, like right now, you and I together, if I was not present with you, I'm multitasking, or I'm just not here, or let's just say I'm sitting in a state of judgment or busyness, or like, I can't believe we're having this conversation. I think we're going, like, if I was anything but the intention of, I just want to be present with you and give you 100% right now, you would feel it. And we see this in organizations, or one of our things that we're working on, especially over the last 2 years since the pandemic, has been authentic positivity in the organization versus toxic. And the authentic positivity means that one of the most simple ways to start to create that is the simple act of being really, truly present with positive intent with the people around us. But this is something that is so easily lost in the busyness of the world. And it's not because people are bad or they don't want to be caring. It's just because they overwhelm themselves. So I think this ability that we have as humans to decide, how do I want to show up? Okay, how do I need to take care of myself to show up that way? Because self-care is a huge part of the methodology, Patricia, as you've seen, like self-care is huge. We actually hold self-care as one of the most important leadership skills you will ever have. Because if I'm depleted and I'm not taking care of myself and I can't hold my space and I'm overwhelmed by other people's energy, or I'm putting out really yucky energy, there's no way I can create the kind of impact and care and even decision-making that I'm capable of from that space.
So true. You have a whole section on the science of showing up. I'd love for you to share a little bit about that.
Oh my goodness. I'm laughing because it's the one chapter that I needed the most help on, because I'm not a scientist. And so I actually worked with an incredible Dr. Sanok Lee, who helped with that book. I basically interviewed her for hours and hours and hours. I just always like to give credit where credit's due. I interviewed her for hours and hours and hours, and then wrote it up, and then had her tear it apart when I wrote up and misunderstood. But basically, if you look through, I'm really proud of that chapter because it does help connect the dots around what's happening. When we meditate, what happens to our brain? When we have a choice point, I think my favorite thing that we talk about in this work, one of my favorite things is the idea of a choice point. So at any moment, you and I are hanging out and something happens, I have a choice. I can go into judgment, or I can go to curiosity. I can go into feeling like a victim, or I can go into authorship. I can feel like going into complaining or making a request. It's a choice point at every moment. And what happens is, whatever we choose, we are building the neural pathways to get really good at doing that. So for example, if I complain all the time, my brain goes, whoa, she's really good. Let's build those neural pathways. And now I am like a good complainer. However, if I, instead of complaining, keep looking for what's the request or the suggestion or the little thing I can do to shift this, if I start to look there instead, my brain goes, ooh, she's really good at that. Let's build that out. Gratitude versus entitlement. I think that they've done studies where they've said, they've looked at people with, I'm really going to butcher this study, but something around like, they found that people who had been injured, or people who had made a ton of money, had won the lottery. The ones that didn't win the lottery but had gratitude for what they didn't have were happier than the ones that won the lottery and wanted more, like that. So there's a lot of different studies out there. But choice points, gratitude is a choice point. The thing that we talked about earlier today, or that we alluded to, is I just lost my father. I'm literally back just yesterday from his services over this weekend. And it was a really complex relationship. It was just, there's just a lot to it. And we laid him to rest. And I'm very, very grateful that he's at peace now. But throughout that whole thing, there was a lot of different family dynamics. There's just a lot of different things that anybody listens can understand. Family dynamics are, they're very rarely very, very simple. But I was making choice points throughout this whole process around where did I want to focus? And where I kept choosing to focus was gratitude, 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 gratitude. And that focus really helped me move through the last month of processing everything that's happened so that on the other side of it, I have more peace versus where I could have been focusing on would have been where things were hard or where things were complex. I want to be really responsible and not say that it's like a Pollyanna spiritual bypass, because it's actually really important that when we're going through stuff, we choose what we want to focus on, but we also want full permission to feel our full emotions. So you and I were talking before this about grief and the different stages of grief and how that's so real. You go through all the different phases, and this is where having the support of like a therapist or a really good friend that can hold space for you without judgment is so important. Because the more I was able in the last month to process my grief, to process any anger or frustration, to process hurt, but then the more I was able to do that authentically and in a safe space, the easier it was for me to keep going then towards my choice point of how I wanted to show up in all the services, how I wanted to show up giving the eulogy, how I wanted to show up with feeling gratitude, so that coming out of it, like I'm not over it. It's still very tender, but I feel in integrity with myself and I feel a lot of love. I think that focusing there helps to build your choice points. And that's a very personal, tender thing to share, but I think it applies.
That was beautiful.
It's very real for me right now. I don't know anybody that has gone through loss, death, family dynamics period that does not have some version of complexity. And I think that at the end of the day, the thing that's most important is love, but also who we become through that love, no matter how complex it is. And to me, that's a choice point. That's a choosing, but at least for me, that has given me a lot of peace versus being in judgment or anger or staying in anger or any of that. Nobody wins there, especially we're the ones that get hurt by that. But if you look at that from an organizational standpoint, just to make this very real in the world, my choice point with a direct report or at work, if we're having a hard time, here's a choice point with culture. If I don't like my culture and I've got a lot of judgment around my culture or my team or how my team's getting along, I have influence over that. My choice point is I get to start getting curious about how can we do this better?
Thank you so much for sharing such a personal story. I know that can be really hard, but I feel like these personal experiences we go through show us who we really are. And the more complex and emotional, the more difficult, and the more we really need these skills.
Yeah, for sure. I was very grateful for, I had a beautiful, beautiful father, and I was very grateful for the skills that got created over the last 40 years of my life, just with some of the complexities that end up happening with our family. In retrospect, it's actually a huge piece of where some of this work originated from, because it was so important to me that adults had models to navigate conflict, that adults had models to support them in showing up with intention, energy, and presence. We were laughing about it one night over the weekend because we were talking about this work. And some of my cousins were like, oh my gosh, no wonder that you created a body of work to help adults really show up intentionally and to really take care of ourselves. Because the thing is that when we don't take care of ourselves, we hurt people. You and I are talking about family dynamics, but I'm talking about every dynamic. The leaders too, the most damaging, scary leaders to me, the most scary leader to me in an organization is a leader who has not gotten curious about their blind spots and who is not taking care of themselves. And who is not taking the time to do some of the stuff that you and I are talking about, because ultimately it's like the leader that came up to me at the end and patted me on the shoulder. Good job. I don't need this, but they do. And they're like, that is the scariest leader in the organization. We're quitting them. The scariest leader to me is the leader who thinks that they don't have work to do, or they're not getting curious about their impact, or they're not asking for feedback. Cause that's another way you asked her, like, how do you find out what your blind spots are? You ask people that you trust to give you feedback. And in that, you want people who maybe aren't your biggest fans to give you feedback. I don't want all the people to just love me and think I'm lovely to give me feedback. I also want to hear from the people who are my bigger critics, like with love, with care, like the way you bring it to me is going to make an impact on how I'm going to receive it. but you can ask people for feedback. And so I think that doing the deeper work, getting curious, taking a stand for, because here's the other thing. When you look at toxic leadership, it's nobody wakes up in the morning and says they want to be a toxic leader. Nobody wakes up and says they want to have negative impact on people. Nobody, maybe there might be a couple of people, I don't know. But in my experience, generally speaking, people want to have a good impact. They want to be a good parent. They want to leave a leg. They're good. It's just, there's a lack of awareness. There's old trauma. There's old stuff that gets in the way of doing that. And so I think that the more we can be aware of and intentional about what's happening for us and get the care that we need to lead, the better off we are.
What about burnout? I think burnout actually applies both. Of course, we all know this at work. There's these things like quiet quitting, and it's a big issue now and probably always has been. But there's also burnout in relationships. We get tired. What are some of your tools? You have something like 7 P's for burnout. Burnout, I think, is complex. These emotions we're talking about are all very complex, but what are some of your thoughts on burnout?
I think that burnout is rarely what we think burnout's about. For example, a lot of times people, the common thought thinking is that burnout comes from working too much, burning the candle at both ends, a lot of drama in relationships, which I agree that can all lead to burnout. But I also know people who work 60, 80 hours a week and they are not burnout at all. Like, think about those people. I know people who work a ton, they're not burnout. And I know people that barely work 30 hours a week that are totally burnout. I know people who've got relationships that have tons of drama in them, but they're not burnout. And then I know people who have no drama and it's very steady eddy relationship and they're burnout. I love the look you're giving me right now. So you're like, wait, where's going with this? Here's where I've come to, is that burnout is about how connected we are to purpose.
Ah, yes.
How connected we are to ourselves. I've refined those P's since writing the book, and I've distilled them down even more to the 4 P's of self-partnership. I think that the antidote to burnout is self-partnership. So self-partnership, you start with presence in the pause. Our ability to stop and pause and be present with ourselves, that actually, to me, is one of the most important ways to get in front of burnout or to move through it, is to stop and be really present. What's actually happening right now? How do I feel? That pause could include celebrating what has gone right. And this is relationship or work. Like, I'm looking at both of these as I'm saying this. So there's presence in the pause. Second part of the self-partnership, one of the P's, is purpose, connection to purpose. Why am I doing the work that I'm doing? Those people that work 80 hours a week and they're just in flow, they're usually pretty connected to purpose and why it's important to them and being of service. Same thing with the relationship. We get burnout on relationships, but I believe that if we're staying in connection and in communication around what's going on for us, if we're staying connected to the purpose of the relationship, or we're staying connected to having honest conversations and being present with each other, I think that we can do that differently without having to get burnout. The relationship may be over. It might not work anymore. It may be complete, but I don't believe that we have to get ourselves burnout. I think that where we get ourselves burnout is we disconnect from those P's. So presence in the pause is the first set of P's. Purpose is the second set of P's. Pain and pleasure is the third set of P's, which is allowing ourselves full permission for our pain. So like I just talked about going through the loss of my dad over the last month, full permission for pain. Some days on the floor. And then also at the same time, full permission for pleasure, which is then what would I go do to take care of myself, to go have fun, to go do something different. One of the places where I really saw that happening with those P's was in the pandemic, because when the pandemic hit, I would get calls from business leaders who were in a ton of pain because their companies were failing, like all the obvious things, death, like all the obvious stuff that was happening during the pandemic. But I got a lot of calls also from people who actually were having an incredible experience of the pandemic. Their businesses were doing better in the pandemic. Their relationships were getting stronger in the pandemic, and they were having a hard time with their pleasure because they felt so guilty about it. So denying ourselves full permission for pleasure or pain, I think that will lead to burnout. And then the last P is people. And people is the people that are there for us, our people, our posse. In the books, I call it your personal posse. The people that are there for us, that support us, that love us, that we can connect with, that will give us honest feedback, that will sit with us in our pain and reflect back our blind spots without being attached to being right. That's important. And then the other side of people is the people that we serve. Because I know for me, when I'm starting to hit myself going on burnout, and I come in and out of burnout all the time. I just want to be really clear. Like our mutual friend, Rob, always, we laugh about it. He goes, oh my God, I've seen you come in and out of burnout so often. Because I'll hit it. And then what happens is I'll start to hit burnout. I'll be like, whoa. And then I just take a step back and go, okay, which of these P's am I not in alignment with? Sometimes if I go even deeper into that, I will find like, oh, I'm not clear on my intention, or I'm trying to go in 10 different directions with my intention at once. And that ties into purpose. So I can bring myself back online. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just real quick, my get out of jail free every single time is connecting with the people that we serve and why this work exists and why I believe in this and why do I write books and why do I do these conversations? It's because I love people and I want us to have an even more beautiful world and humanity as we move forward. And so that will quickly start to re-energize me where I can go, okay, I can get back in the game. So self-ownership, yeah.
Your ability to examine what's going on is so advanced. That is incredibly helpful. I want to ask you maybe one or two last questions. What is your best advice for finding your purpose? For people who are listening who struggle with this, or all of us, like we go through different transitions in our lives and we want to reinvestigate. What is our purpose? What is your advice for that?
Let go of trying to find your purpose. Don't make it grandiose. I know there's a lot of formulas and methodologies out there, and a lot is put on the importance of purpose. So now I'm going to contradict myself because I just said purpose is one of your four P's. I still stand by that. But here's where I see us get into trouble with purpose. We try and make it this grandiose thing. We put so much pressure on it. My purpose has to be about world peace. My purpose has to be about solving world hunger. Make it so big. What if your purpose is just to be? What if your purpose is just love? What if your purpose is just to have joy in your life and to pay that forward? I don't know what everyone's purpose is, but what I notice is this. The place to find your purpose is not in going and sitting on a mountain and going into your head and trying to think it out. The place to find your purpose is actually being really present with yourself to start to notice, where do I feel in flow? Where do I feel good? Where do I feel most connected? Where do I feel like I am being in service of what matters to me? And in that, if you can start to pay attention to those feelings of, again, contraction, expansion. If I'm off purpose, I feel contraction. I start to feel irritated. I start to feel resentful. If I'm on purpose, I feel open and abundant and free and expansive, and I've got everything to give. And so if we can start, it comes back to that awareness, start to pay attention to where do we light up? What feels good? Where do we feel in alignment with ourselves? And where do we not? And in there is purpose. Your purpose might just be as simple as to bring lightness
to your day.
Yeah, to your day and to anybody you meet. So if that becomes my purpose, then that means during the day, I can just check in. Well, am I adding and contributing to things being lighter? Am I not? So let go of making it this really big, huge thing where you have to solve a huge problem. And then you might find it's even bigger than you thought. I don't know, but that's my best advice for that.
And my last question,
yes,
which I ask many of my guests, is what three pieces of advice would you give your 10-year-old self?
Oh my God.
Yeah, you're a younger self.
My little 10-year-old self. She's so cute.
I know, right?
Yeah. I have all these pictures. I was just given envelopes of pictures and we were just going through them last night. I was taking my son through them. We were just like, oh my God, you were 10. So I'm just thinking about that 10-year-old little girl. I think I'd tell her to listen to herself and to trust herself. I know it sounds very cliche, but I would tell her that. I would say, just listen to yourself and trust yourself. You're really smart and you know what you're doing and you have a sixth sense about things. So trust that. I think I would tell her that. I would tell her that things might get hard for a while, but it's okay. Keep learning from them, which I think she did. But I think I would want to give her a hug and tell her that, like, it's okay. Things are going to take a turn and it's going to be okay. You're going to learn from it and you're going to do some really cool stuff with that. And then I would also tell her something that one of my mentors said to me years ago, which just set me free. And I think I would like her to have that too, which was, he said to me, Anise, people are going to tell you you're great and people are going to tell you you're horrible. And he said, believe none of them. And it's one of my favorite pieces of advice. It was given to me by a man named Chris Wallace. Just beautiful, 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 loving man. And was one of my teachers in a training program I did. And yeah, that bit of input I'd want to give my 10-year-old, because when I got that as a 35-year-old or however old I was, it set me free. It's like, of course, people are going to tell you you're great. People are going to tell you you're horrible. Believe none of them. Believe none of them. So that's what I would tell my little 10-year-old. So I think those are the things that show up for me. You didn't prime me with questions, which I'm really grateful for. So
I didn't know. I love this conversation so much. I could talk to you forever. Anise, thank you for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you for doing the work that you're doing with going deeper into the things. I was so excited to talk to you because I knew that we were not going to have a standard. So what is this? And what is that? How do you do this? And what are the 5 steps? I didn't know where we'd go. So thank you for the organicness of this. And thank you also for just the space you held. So lovely.
You're the best.
You're the best.
Thanks for joining today. You can learn more about Anise at activechoices.com. There'll also be a link to her 4-piece handout in the show notes, as well as information on our free monthly executive forums for leaders who are responsible for culture, leadership, innovation, and performance. And don't forget to check out choosemuse.com/meditation studio for hundreds of free meditations. Any comments, suggestions, ideas, reach out to us at untangle@choosemuse.com. You can leave a review for us on Apple Podcasts. That always helps to get the word out. We hope you have a great week, and we'll see you next time.